Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. I'm here with Dr. Gregory Eastwood, professor from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. Our topic is the ethical questions surrounding influence and potential conflicts of interest from pharmaceutical or medical device makers. And welcome back, Dr. Eastwood. We were just leaving off talking about the influence over everything we see from advertising to physicians' offices and so forth. And where I'd like to go from here is talking about education. A new drug is developed or a new device is invented, and education needs to happen. And we have education from medical students to doctors who are practicing to a staff at a hospital, for instance, to the general public. And there seems like an awful lot of influence from these device makers and pharmaceutical companies.
Well, education is needed by all of us, and
yes,
you've included all of us, and that's appropriate. Certainly from the medical student point of view, people go to medical school to learn, among other things, about drugs and how they act. And I think many of us have heard about the recent issue at Harvard Medical School where the students were listening to a lecture by a prominent physician. It turns out that physician had ties to a number of pharmaceutical companies, and the subject of the lecture was cholesterol. And in any event, the students were upset about this. This led to a number of things, but one thing that we are aware of is that there's a student-supported rating or ranking of all medical schools in the United States. Harvard got an F,
yep,
which means fail. Our own medical school here, SUNY Upstate Medical University School of Medicine, got a B, which isn't bad compared to the C at Yale and other
right,
and the F at Harvard.
But we should make the point that the whole point of this rating was students were trying to figure out how much influence on what they were learning was being made by these drug companies. And what they learned was that in many cases, their professors were being influenced by the drug makers.
That's right. Or at least there was a potential conflict,
yes,
of interest.
Yes.
We don't really know whether the professors were influenced or not, but at least it wasn't disclosed. And that's an important thing.
Absolutely. And what it really boils down to is a question of, and this is a word that's used a lot in healthcare now, and that's transparency.
That's right.
Understanding where these potentials are. Not saying that the conflicts of interest are happening, just that there are potentials for it. And that's exactly what the students were looking for. But it also takes place in other places. You know, I'm in constant correspondence and discussions with all kinds of professionals. And I know that even doctors who have been practicing for 20 years take continuing medical education, CME as it's called. And often those are sponsored by pharmaceutical companies. How objective can they be?
Yes, well, this has come under criticism, and you're absolutely right. The CME, or continuing medical education courses and conferences, have been sponsored by drug companies, and often with a snack or some food associated with it. And in private practice, the drug representatives often visit the practice site and give, as we said in the earlier segment, pens and other things to the staff and the physician, and also maybe some sandwiches. So these are very welcome people when,
mm-hmm,
they come to visit you.
They are. Well, you know, it seems to me that the point and where we need to be moving is not so much that it's a bad thing to get the education, or that it's a bad thing that pharmaceutical companies or device makers are doing their own marketing because that's what they need to do. Rather, we need to be looking for neutral ways to get the right information and neutral ways for doctors to get the information they need to prescribe for their patients.
There are sources. They just have to be sought.
Mm-hmm.
There are periodicals that come out every week or two about drugs that give accurate, unbiased information.
And they look like at a whole class of drugs, right?
They look at a class of drugs, that's correct. There are conferences that physicians can attend, either in their local hospital or at the medical school.
But are those conferences being underwritten by pharma?
Well, less and less so. Let's,
uh-huh,
put it that way.
Okay.
And I think the institutional guidelines that are being developed and the AMA's own recent guidelines recommend that if they are sponsored by drug manufacturers, that the dollars go to the institution first, and then that the institution pays for the event.
So it's not a direct one-on-one correlation.
That's correct. In fact, there's a very specific recommendation in the AMA guidelines that the physicians are not paid directly.
And you know, I think that's fair because we still have to get the information. And I do know, again, going back to my daughter, she had to go through a very rigorous learning curve to learn about the different drugs that she works with and learn about her competitors and learn about the science and the biology mm-hmm. of how they work. So it's not that these folks are just all bad. That's not the point. It's the point is just making a neutral, objective source.
We're not talking really about bad or good. We're talking about conflict of interest.
Yes.
And I really think that when we shine light on these conflicts of interest, that will go a long way to resolving them.
And transparency again.
That's right.
You know, in Pennsylvania, there's an initiative underway where the state of Pennsylvania has hired drug reps. And these drug reps do not represent one drug. They represent a class of drugs. Mm-hmm. And they call on doctors and they say, okay, here's this class of drugs, drug A, B, C, D, and E. Here are the benefits to each one. Here are the pros and the cons for each one. And I'll leave behind samples and you can give them to your patients. But the doctor has received the education from a supposedly neutral source. That sounds like a fair way to do it to me.
It sounds like an excellent way to do it, and I'm very interested in how that experiment turns out.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. We don't really have the answers on that yet. Let's go now to patients and the patient's mm-hmm. point of view. What is the influence on patients? Do we know that patients are getting bad information? Do we know they shouldn't really be prescribed these drugs? I don't think we do.
We don't know that. We do know that patients are being marketed directly. This is a phenomenon that has occurred over the last 5 or 10 years. You can turn on your television, listen to your radio, open up any magazine. Mm-hmm. I was telling you earlier that I was having my breakfast about 2 months ago and looking at Newsweek magazine, and I found 5 full-page ads for medications.
For different drugs. And devices, right. Yep. And there they are. And so, you know, patients say to me, I don't know why they put these on TV. It's not like I can go and buy it off the shelf at the drugstore. But the truth is, every one of them ends with a statement that says, ask your doctor, which by law they have to do. But asking your doctor is exactly what patients do.
That's right. Now, some doctors feel this puts an additional burden on them. I actually think that most physicians are accommodating to this and may actually welcome these questions, because then it ideally gives the physician the opportunity to say, yes, that is right for you, or no, something else is right for you, mm-hmm. or nothing is right for you.
And you know, it's sad but true, what I hear from physicians often is, if I know it won't hurt, I go ahead and write it.
Mm.
And you know, so going back to that whole question of why do they put these ads on TV? Because they work. Because they do. These drugs do increase their market share, and that's what their goal is to write more of those prescriptions. You know, and actually, I like to give patients tools. And what I say to them is, if you see a drug on TV or in a magazine and you think it can help you, let that be your starting point for your education. Go online or go to the library and learn about that class of drugs, other drugs that are made by different manufacturers. Don't just ask for the purple pill. You know, that's kind of always the classic because it's so easy. Instead, learn about all the proton pump inhibitors, which is what right. the purple pill is.
Mm-hmm.
Learn about the benefits and the things that might harm you. And then have a conversation with your doctor about that whole class of drugs.
Yes, this assumes or asks for physicians to be better educated themselves. And I think the internet has really facilitated that. Many times patients visit physicians and say, I've looked this up on the internet. Now, also many patients do not have access to the internet, and it raises the, I suppose, the issue of distribution of justice here, in a sense, that some patients do have access, other patients don't, and it maybe broadens some disparities.
It used to, and you know, I would say to you that 5 years ago I would have said that was a fair argument, but you can go to any public library now and
yes.
you can access the internet for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a barrier might be if you can't get to the library, but the barrier is no more that you just don't have access unless you can't get to the mm-hmm. library. So,
mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you can ask other people. You can say, you know, I'm interested in this. Would you look this up for me and print some of these things out? There are also other neutral resources you were talking about before. I didn't know about journals. Tell mm-hmm. me about the journals that are neutral.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are journals, of course, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the New England Journal of Medicine, and hundreds of other journals that have a peer review process.
Mm-hmm.
That has sometimes been criticized, but I think that's pretty close to being a good standard. Now, the public doesn't have direct access to these journals unless they seek them out, but physicians do. And then there are other things that are available to the public that are put out by Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, other reputable medical establishments. Mm-hmm. Now, one can be critical of those too, but I choose to think that those actually are pretty good sources for patients as well.
Absolutely. And we were talking earlier, the Cleveland Clinic has gone so far now, as have some of the drug manufacturers, mm-hmm. as to start listing exactly where the potentials are. The physicians on their websites, if they have any kind of, if they're accepting any kind of income from any of these manufacturers, it's listed on their profiles.
That's right. Cleveland Clinic was the first to do this. And if you go on their website, look up a specific doctor, you can see what kind of or what their industry ties are.
As long as they're over,
I think $5,000 is
threshold
the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And Medtronics, Pfizer, other companies are voluntarily divulging any payments they make to physicians
they
and
are.
Others. But I think, you know, this is fine, and we're going to see much more openness, and the public is going to be grateful for
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, and it goes to that word transparency. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as long as we can have access to the information we need, then we can use the access. It's when they say, no, you can't have it, that we all get upset.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Gregory Eastwood, this has been a fascinating discussion as usual. We'll look forward to your return next month for whatever
too.
Our topic is going to be then. It's always of interest, and I thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Listeners, we will be back in just a few minutes. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.